Hello, everyone, and welcome to One Kill Port Podcast, episode 336. Benjamin Yoder here today to talk to you about video games. We're going to skip news, though, this week. No news. I looked around at news the last couple of weeks, and nothing really jumped out at me. I briefly did look into, like, Koei Tecmo's financials, and initially I was like, oh, their mobile game revenue is actually, like, really high, and it is really high. It's actually increased a lot. But they put out their financial report, and we're talking about the fact that the Atelier mobile game did not meet their expectations at the same time. So it gets into that weird situation of, like, the revenue's high, but is the investment that they put into it actually worth it? Is it profitable, right? And does that offset the other things they're doing? So anyways, that was the only thing I really looked into, and I don't feel like I have any real thoughts beyond, like, huh, interesting. So this week's going to be focused on personal updates. I've had a lot of things kind of going on generally the last few weeks. A lot of kind of big changes to how I approach games as a whole, maybe. I think some of this will be kind of overlap with some previous stuff we've talked about. But anyways, also we're going to be talking about a snack company metaverse. I think we were going to talk about this months ago, maybe at this point, like... getting close to maybe like a year ago, and I ended up not talking about it for a variety of reasons. We'll get into it when I get there. We have the final Jillian's Corner. Jillian, it's time to impact the earth with our creator, our question creator. So there'll be that. And then we're also just going to talk about fighting games for a bit. I've been spending a lot of time messing around with fighting games, and I just want to kind of follow up on what's up with that, because I think I learned a lot about myself and other people and how people engage with fighting games. And I'm just going to kind of continue our talk from, like, Evo last year when I went to that. So just kind of follow up. I'll give you a quick rundown of, like, what the Evo situation was. There's an old podcast where I did, like, a full talk about my time at Evo and kind of what I went through in that time. So anyways, but to get into personal update stuff. So if you don't know, historically, for reasons that might be apparent, I have been very kind of prone to not play games portably. And the reason for this comes down to mostly, you know, the feeling, the need to capture a video game. I need the gameplay footage. I've had too many times in the past where I've played a game, felt really strongly about it, but didn't capture anything, or maybe wanted to talk about it later, and then I didn't have any gameplay, and so, like, I'd have to go back and re-record gameplay, and depending on the game, it can be challenging, because, like, you know, if it's like a 30, 40, 50 plus hour RPG or something like that, right, going back and getting the footage you want can be challenging without just going and finding it on YouTube and taking it from there, and then you can't really control the video, you don't know if it's running on emulator, you don't know, like, you know, what the capture setup is, and it's just like, I just want this game to look normal, and sometimes that just is hard to do sometimes when you just go grab stuff off YouTube. So I usually care a lot about capturing video games. But recently I decided to sit down and play Yoshi Topsy Turvy. And, I believe the last time we talked about this, I was mentioning I'm going to try to record this using a GameCube, to tilt the controller. But the problem with Yoshi Topsy Turvy versus, like, what's that game called? Kirby Tilt and Tumble. That's there. I was saying Touch and Roll in my head, but that's not any video game as far as I'm aware. Kirby Tilt and Tumble, that Kirby Tilt and Tumble doesn't rely on buttons very much. Buttons can be a part of it for sure, but it's just not a huge focus. Where Yoshi Topsy Turvy is a game where you really need to move Yoshi around. It's like a 2D platformer, but you change the world and the gravity of that world using the gyro on the game pack. And so, like, even trying to play that with a GameCube, it's just a very strange experience because the game leans into the screen tilting and stuff like that. And, like, that's kind of how you kind of gauge how the gravity of the world's being changed and stuff too. And so it's very, it wouldn't have been a good experience. And I, you know, for Tilt and Tumble, I did play some of that on Game Boy Color just to make sure I kind of knew what was going on with that game. But I just decided, you know, we're just going to play Yoshi Topsy Turvy on a portable system. And the kind of the benefit of this is that, you know, I'm trying to shove more portable, well, I'm trying to shove video games into my life more. It is a weird amount of time I can go without playing video games. And I think a lot of that comes from my inability to, I really want to play a game for a long period of time. I really want to sit down and focus on a video game when I play it. And so that means an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. Sometimes, you know, in the case of JRPGs, depending on like the mood I'm in, that can be like an entire weekend of like every waking moment playing JRPGs. And that's, it's just not very feasible anymore. And I've been doing a lot of like life stuff. I think I've mentioned before that like I'm in therapy and stuff, and I've made some pretty significant strides in organizing my life and figuring out what I need to do to maintain, you know, this kind of video game exploratory life alongside, you know, normal everyday life kind of thing, and trying to make sure those things are in balance. And I think the big thing is I don't want to abandon what I have. I think I just need a better balance in my life. And so shoving games into smaller parts of my day, you know, not wasting time just like sitting there scrolling on Twitter, not wasting time, you know, just watching YouTube videos that don't matter to me, but I just want noise to like fill my time. I think a lot of that is kind of like what has driven me to look at portable games again. So Yoshi Topsy Turvy was kind of the first one. And thankfully, the levels in that game are pretty short. There's a lot. We'll talk about Topsy Turvy in detail at some point, whether it be on the podcast or in a video I record. But that game is a really challenging game to enjoy for me. But at the end of the day, I can say this. The levels were short. I could beat a level in like 2-3 minutes. Bam, done. And it felt good to be able to just like wake up in the morning, you know, play 2 or 3 levels of Yoshi Topsy Turvy, then be awake and my mind wide awake, but eyes wide open. Is that like Cowboy Bebop? Is that what it is? Like the first episode, I think, where the guy spraying drugs in his eye and goes, "Keep those eyes open," or something like that. Anyways, so I finished that, and then I also started up Dynasty Warriors on the PSP. And I was a little concerned about Dynasty Warriors initially, because when I think of Dynasty Warriors on console, Dynasty Warriors is a game that you kind of sit down and you got to play through like a whole map. But at least the first Dynasty Warriors on PSP, and it sounds like maybe the one after it, it chops up battles in that game to these little tiny squares of areas. It's almost, it feels in some ways Monster Hunter-esque, where, you know, maybe unsurprisingly on the same platform and the limitations of the PSP and stuff. But, you know, it is really built around, you know, this idea, I think, that you are going to play this game and you might need to get up and leave soon, right? You know, these missions feel, you know, I've talked before about like PSP games and stuff. I've always heard that like certain PSP games were designed with like train stops in mind. And in some extent, I feel like Dynasty Warriors feels like that way. Like each mission is going to take the time it takes between getting two train stops in Japan kind of thing. And so it's been pretty interesting. And a lot of this came down to like, I had to kind of go through and, get my Game Boy Advance SP up and running, get my PSP up and running. And in the case of my PSP 1000, the UMD drive didn't work. So I had to also, you know, hack it with custom firmware and that kind of stuff, which thankfully PSP hacking is ridiculously easy. So I started, one thing I did do is like, I've made a pile of like junk games, and I'm recording my cleaning process and stuff on those, and eventually, hopefully, a repair process kind of thing. And so videos of that will probably start going up on the OCP Plus channel somewhat soon as I kind of go through that process there. But yeah, I think it's been interesting to kind of like have portable games be reintroduced into my life and be reintroduced in a way that's like these small bite-sized things. I think the big thing is like trying to figure out how much do I stress about how those games fit into my life, right? I think when I wake up in the morning, you know, I want something that's going to be quick, easy, you know, 5 to 10 minutes at most kind of thing. And so finding games that fit in that realm and make sense is kind of one thing. Thankfully for Dynasty Warriors, there's not really a lot of like content that feels unique depending on progression. A lot of the story in that game is just like paragraphs of text on a page. And so in the case of that game, like if I want to go record footage later, it's very easy to do. That game just kind of looks the same all throughout for the most part, in my opinion, based off what I've seen of it so far. So I don't think like capturing stuff later will be a problem. But something like Yoshi Topsy Turvy, what I'm probably gonna have to do for that is just use somebody else's gameplay, somebody who actually has a setup available for capturing that. Although, in hindsight, so I'm still trying to get my Nintendo DS I knocked my glasses cleaner over. My Nintendo DS modded. Well, I was looking for a Nintendo DS and thankfully found one today in great condition. It's one of the blue electric blue DSs and it looks amazing. I was surprised. It was $50 too. And I'm like, I don't know if this is like an aftermarket shell or something, but if it is, it looks great. Everything about it functions properly. So I may eventually get a capture card for that. And at that time, if I, you know, especially if I like record my Yoshi Topsy Turvy impressions on the podcast, there is a non-zero chance that I might use that as a way to capture gameplay for Yoshi Topsy Turvy. So I at least have that. But going back and recapturing some gameplay in some of these cases, I think is not going to be a huge deal. Especially for these like smaller games, like I highly doubt that Dynasty Warriors PSP or Yoshi Topsy Turvy will be these kind of like games that ultimately I need to have a dense amount of footage for. I think if I'm playing portable RPGs, that's going to be where things get a little scary because, you know, if I want to talk about a portable RPG without recording it, then that becomes kind of a problem, potentially. So. Anyways, oh, one other thing kind of related to this, not really portable, but I have a PlayStation TV, which is, you know, a Vita that you can hook up to your TV. I recently got an exercise bike. It's starting to get hot here in Las Vegas, and I like walking outside. Walking is my favorite form of exercise, even though it's not much of an exercise most of the time. And I really hate, like, walking on ellipticals and things like that, staring at a wall. So if you don't remember, like, years ago, it might have been, like, I might have talked about this on the podcast. I was trying to kind of exercise while playing on bikes and stuff, playing video games. And I beat Breath of Fire 2 that way, actually. But the problem was always that there was like these, I'm in a gym, it wouldn't work out very well because I have the console in my hand, you know, everything's bobbing up and down, especially on like a DS, and especially if it's like a 2DS XL, you know, the frame is like kind of bouncing around and stuff. And, you know, for Switch games, the text is really small. All that kind of stuff. There's just a lot of headaches and stuff. So just having an exercise bike in my home that I could use was helpful. So I got one of those recently, and I set up the PlayStation TV, and I finally decided I'm going to play through Chaos Rings, and I'm going to play through it that way. The battle system just looked pretty straightforward for the most part. The text of the game's pretty big and things like that. So I did a little extra custom firmware modding on my PSTV. There's this thing called Sharp Scale, which basically lets you kind of remove a lot of the like filtering effects that the PlayStation TV applies to games. So it can make games look sharper generally. And there's some caveats around that. That there's like a good My Life in Gaming video about it, honestly. So if you're curious about that, go check that out. But yeah, I got that all set up. And eventually I'm sure I'll play Dynasty Warriors on there as well to capture gameplay and stuff like that. So, but I am able to capture Chaos Rings on my exercise bike. So, you know, I will have all that footage and stuff. Although the first time I sat down to try to capture it, the audio is wrong or not working. And I was looking, I was like, oh gosh. So I was like on the exercise bike exercising while troubleshooting my capture card. I got it working, so yeah, but it was kind of funny. So we're going a while, so I'm going to kind of blast through the second half of this personal update stuff. Japanese stuff, I'm still working on Japanese stuff. I got a Genki book recently. My Japanese coach is just not cutting it in terms of like giving me direction on what I need to do. So I still plan to get through all of my Japanese coach, but I'm going to have to use assistance. Just the game doesn't do a very good job of giving you information. And I think at this point, I've kind of given up on the game ever kind of resolving that over time. It's great for introducing concepts to you. It will tell you these things exist, but you really got to go do your own research for it. And so it resulted in a lot of situations where I was looking for things about topics that I had to go find other places that were teaching it. And it was just hard to make sure I was like learning the right thing or learning what my Japanese coach specifically was asking me to learn at the time. Cause you'd be like, oh, here's some verb tenses, but like there's a lot of different things around verb tenses and there's different types of verb tenses. And it's like, well, my Japanese coach, what are you trying to tell me about these verb tenses? What do you want me to do with these? And then I'll just say things like, you should practice using these, but there's like no exercises for using them. There's just a lot of limitations. I think that Learn a Language Coach series is essentially, I think there's probably a lot of limitations based on the fact that like all those games are built within the same tool set. I think they're pretty decent for vocabulary learning. But I think outside of that, you know, you're really not getting a lot out of my Japanese coach, in my opinion. Although maybe writing as well with the touchscreen aspect. I'm terrible at writing in every situation though, so it's hard for me to judge that. I also kind of wrapped up my time with Shashin Go. I don't know if I mentioned that. I played that I did start that about a month and a half ago. I'm not going to go too deep into that because I think I will eventually either talk about it in depth on the podcast or do some kind of separate video. for the OCP Plus channel. But essentially, I think it's a great tool for like learning vocab and stuff. But the things that are in there about learning additional Japanese things, I don't think really help you that much. So I think it is very much a, hey, do you want to learn like 150 vocab words in a like fun way? I think that's kind of what Shashingo is like great for, but we'll get into that. There's also some weird like gamification I kind of did with it where I'm like playing it like a shooter and I'm like like swapping my mouse camera around and just like trying to snipe, you know, these objects that I need to trans or have, you know, choose the right one that I'm getting prompted to find to kind of thing. So and then for content stuff, you know, I've been talking a lot about these like videos and stuff, but like I've been playing a lot of games, shorter games, and I've been doing that stuff where I'm like looking at these this hardware that I'm trying to clean up and hopefully eventually repair. And I also went through and I was trying to get rid of my console boxes because I've had them for so long and I don't know what to do with them. And the only thing I think about when I see them is maybe I should get rid of these. So the answer is probably I should get rid of them. And I went and traded them into a local store. So thankfully they took them and hopefully they can find new homes or they can throw it away. And as long as they don't tell me they threw them away, I'm okay. I recorded a video for that where I just went over all those boxes one last time and just kind of like would talk about, you know, if there was a memory connected to that box, what was that memory? And I think that's probably plenty enough for me going forward. So there's that stuff. But there's going to be a lot of weekly content on the OCP Plus channel. There has been stuff posting for a while. There's been some Dojin game stuff going up as well, if you haven't seen. So that's been going up. There's some DS content coming up and, you know, those videos where I'm, you know, sitting down and looking at hardware and cleaning it up and stuff like that as well. So more chatty videos while I just kind of do stuff. So if you're looking forward to that, look forward to that if you're into that kind of content. The main videos, the featured videos, I haven't really done a lot of progress on, unfortunately. I've been rethinking a little bit on the tone of the main videos a little bit. I went back and watched my Babylon's Fall video recently because I think the Babylon's Fall video, despite its problems, there's a lot about that video I like. But I think there's a lot of things in that video that I don't necessarily know if I like how I said it. I think a lot of times I run into the problem of like, I'm telling you how you should respond to something, where I think a lot of times I should be telling you what my experience is in those situations, right? So when I talk about, you know, the whole situation in the beginning of that video about, you know, how people kind of look at your game opinions and stuff, I'm really talking about how people looked at my game opinions, still do to some extent, right? And how challenging it is to convey to somebody that, you know, a game is something you enjoy. Like, there's a lot of questions people bring up, and sometimes those questions I think are interesting and valid questions to ask, but other times they feel like they're questions that are just kind of like aimed at kind of devaluing your opinion. And so I think that I think to some extent, if I made that a bit more personal and less made the video less kind of about what you should do, I think I'd feel better. And so I wonder, with some of the videos I had planned that I was working on with Final Fantasy XI, there's that Nintendo video I still kind of want to work on that was built out of the Animal Crossing video. That was a video that didn't really have a purpose initially. And then also a few other things. I think that's maybe the focus I want to do is like, hey, like, I mean, in some ways it'll be more like, I think like the way I want it to be is more like in the tone of this podcast where you're kind of following me on a journey rather than me telling you how to follow a journey, I guess. So trying to find that balance, I think, is going to be a hard thing. And I know that the Stormbringer video came out in December. It's been a long time. So, but I really, since February this year, I've been making some pretty, I don't want to say extreme, a lot of small changes in my life that kind of change my capability to work on things. But also, I have a panel coming up for Level Up Expo. The PCFX fan club still churns, right? And so there's a lot of things going on that I think ultimately are keeping me from doing a featured video, like, super in-depth. And so far, I haven't done a featured video with, like, my new kind of life balance lately. So I don't really know what that looks like yet. And I think there's always the fear on my side when I start working on it that I'll invest too heavily into it. And I think part of this process when I make the next video is going to be making sure I'm balancing my life in that whole process and I can be satisfied with the progress I make in those videos kind of day by day. So it's going to be kind of a back end change as well. So thank you guys for your patience. If you have been waiting for one of those things, if you haven't been waiting, you just like hearing me listen or like hear my voice, I appreciate that too. So yeah, Level Up Expo. I mean, by the time you're hearing this, well, it'll be at the end of this weekend, I think, because you're hearing this on Monday. Yeah, you're hearing this on Monday. This weekend, I have a panel. I haven't really prepared very well, and it's not going to be a very formal panel. I think these can be very kind of chill. I think it's not going to be very like scripted, but I do need to kind of just wrap it up and figure out what I'm doing for the PowerPoint slides and the visuals. I was thinking about like editing together gameplay, but I'm like, maybe I should just like grab some trailers off the internet and just let the trailers play. And I think that's probably fine enough rather than trying to sit there and like create a super cut of everything lining up with exactly what I'm saying all the time kind of thing. That kind of thing. So we'll see. Yeah, and that's it for personal update stuff. Took a long time. Sorry. I have a lot of stuff going on right now in my life. There's some stuff with game controllers and organizing those. That's a whole other thing. I'll talk about that later if I remember to. but yeah, anyways, did I do the intro for this podcast where I told you what we're talking about? I don't even remember. I don't think I did. We're talking about the Bourbon Metaverse, the snack company Metaverse. We're talking about Jillian Corner's Final Question, and then also Fighting Game to the End. I think we talked about that. I had to stop and re-record at one point, and so I think maybe I, and so I started over from the beginning, and maybe I said it in that first round, maybe I didn't say it in that first round. I don't know. Boy, the Bourbon Metaverse, man. I know no one here knows what the Bourbon Metaverse is, I'm pretty certain. So, you know, this is, I think, kind of generally new news to everybody. So about a year ago, Automata Media, one of my favorite websites right now to go to, made a post about the Bourbon Snack Company in Japan. I think it's their 99th anniversary or whatever. They launched a metaverse. If you don't know what a metaverse is, you know, metaverse is kind of like an online hangout space, you know, kind of where you can kind of walk around as a character and hang out with other people and stuff like that. And so the snack company launched a metaverse in like this kind of like Candyland area. They made this like little 3D Candyland place. And I don't really know why they did this, but they did it. And so you could log in and basically you'd kind of go around and you could solve these little puzzles and stuff. Nothing crazy. Or maybe it was like a quiz game. You could like do a multiple choice quiz and things like that. And when you did that stuff, you would earn coins. And as you earn coins, you could use that to play like a gacha machine, and you would earn, you know, different wallpapers for your computer. You can get coupons for snacks and stuff like that. You know, this company's been around for like 100 years and basically one of the main, I think, snack companies in Japan. Could be wrong about that, but I believe that's the case. And so you go around this building and or this area, and eventually you get into a building that's their headquarters, supposedly, or it's like modeled after their headquarters. It's all in Japanese, man, and I did not make any effort to read or understand this, but you know, it's a big building. You go in the big building and it is full of ads. It is full of products that they sell. There's like these little tiny theaters you can sit down and watch movies in, or not movies, ads in. And there's these big screens that also show ads and stuff around as well, and a lot of just like weird little things, like these little, there's like this little island with like a train going around on it, and like they have like a bear mascot, or at least right now they have like a bear mascot, I think, or maybe one of the particular product lines they have has a bear mascot. And this bear mascot is like all over the place. So you're walking around, you're exploring this stuff. And it's pretty interesting to see. I mean, it's not that interesting, but it's kind of just, I think the thing that draws me to Bourbon Metaverse is while you're going through and exploring this stuff, I think is you just kind of ask the questions like, why? You know, I think it's one of those things that like the metaverse was like a hot topic for a while. You know, Facebook changed their name to Meta and things like that. So like, I don't know if they just were like late on the train or just took a long time to get here. But, you know, creating this metaverse, just I don't really know what the point and purpose is. So when I was playing back then, there were some people online. There's about, I think, 6 or 7 people running around from what I remember. I had some guy tell me to follow him, and I walked around and followed him. And I forget. I think I told him, like, I don't speak Japanese. And he said, it's okay, follow, or something like that. And I walked around just you know, hanging out with him. But, you know, I don't know. So he's just walking around this place. And eventually they get to these kind of places in that world that are not 3D models. They're places where you can explore, like, the temple kind of area that's outside the building. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but, like, when you go to Japan, even around, like, office buildings and stuff, you'll find little temples and shrines everywhere. I don't know who owns them, who builds them, if they've been there forever or what. Monolith Soft has a temple shrine area outside their offices area too. I have pictures of it. So, you know, I don't know why this stuff. There's like parks outside of Hunex office kind of thing, and that has like little shrines and stuff in it. Japan's really interesting in that regard of just like you can just be in the city and then just come across a shrine, and that's just, it's just there. So they have like a little, like, you know, 3D diorama view of a shrine near this little character walking around this, like, you know, basically a square box, but this world mapped around it kind of thing. And there's like little information things. There's like these busts of like the company's, you know, previous CEOs and stuff that are there as well. And then you can like go and explore this like little, I guess like this little grass trail. Again, I assume it's something near their office. I don't know the context of the stuff. It's just little things you can explore, and all these things you can collect coins, you know, and that gives you the gacha so you can, you know, roll the different, like, get the little wallpapers and things like that. So yeah. And eventually you get to the end, you climb this tower with just full of information. And as you read information, you also get coins as well. And you get to the very top, and you, well, there's more stuff there as well. And there's little signs and stuff. But eventually you'll find like a little warp pad, and it takes you into this like platform in outer space. And when you first got there in the original version of the metaverse, there was a video first saying thank you for playing. There's this giant like almost calendar thing that seemed to be telling you come back at this time and we'll have new content or something. And then the other thing is there's these five anime girls. And from what I can tell, each of those five anime girls represent a certain type of snack, and maybe they might be specifically kind of their long cookie brands. I don't know for sure. I didn't really do the full research on this, but I believe two of them I've tracked down what brand they represent. And then there's one I believe I've tracked down. I bought them from a local Japanese grocery store, but I haven't looked up their name to see if they connect back to that girl. There's two other girls I don't know who they connect with. So it's like a five-girl, like, idol group thing related to the snack company. And it seems like maybe there's, like, one ad or something where these characters were there, and you just kind of, like, were there with these characters. And like, okay, cool. And that was kind of it. And, you know, you could go around and talk to people while watching ads and stuff like that. That's kind of what it was. And, you know, I guess the bigger thing in all that is that you learn the history of this company, right? Again, I can't read any of this. So it starts off it's really weird because, like, you start in this, like, Candyland area, and you get these, like, things that feel more like, you know, you exploring, you know, a fantasy Candyland kind of thing. And then you get to this building. It's just this very corporate building as you go up this tower, and you get advertised to more and more until you eventually go to space and you find anime girls. So I did a, I played this last year, and I was going to do a video back then. I was going to talk about the podcast back then, but then I was like, maybe I should just do like a full video on it. And the kind of the context was trying to like say like this is really weird and I don't really know why this exists, but then I was like, but also American advertising is also really weird, like Taco Bell and stuff like that. And so I was like, it's just kind of like a different kind of weird, right? And I think the difference being like Taco Bell is that, like, you know, it's more about absurdity, where this is more about like a celebration. But like, I don't know, is it absurdity, you know, making a snack company metaverse? I don't know. And that video eventually turned into the Dog of Bay video. So that's why if you look at that video, there's a little clip of Bourbon Metaverse in there where I put it in there just as a homage to you know, that being talked about. And the AMPM mascot's in there too, which was a part of that original video as well. And I kind of kept that in there too. Does it really make sense in that video? I don't really know, but it's there. Anyways, so I didn't really talk about it, but, you know, I don't really know what I was trying to say about it other than just, like, it's kind of, advertising's weird around the world, right? The ultimate point of the Dog of Bay video in some ways is just, like, attribute a lot of things into Japan about just being weird just for the sake of being weird, when there's kind of this long cultural history behind that weirdness to some extent, right? And I think that you could say the same thing about a lot of things in American culture too, right? And just like, we as Americans just don't have the context for those things sometimes. And I'm not saying always. I've heard before that like sarcasm is like really big in like American humor, right? And I've heard before that like absurdity in Japanese humor plays the similar role that sarcasm does in terms of just like the prevalence of it. That's why I think you generally hear, you know, don't be sarcastic in Japanese humor kind of thing. That doesn't mean that sarcasm doesn't exist in Japanese humor, but I think it is one of the things where there's a risk of overusing it and misusing it kind of thing. I forget where I've heard that before, but anyways, but yeah, it seems like maybe there's like a kind of a disconnect there depending on the place you are. And so like the absurdity of Japanese humor at times can like come off really weird, I think. But, you know, whether that video needs to exist or not, it's kind of a whole other thing. So, but I recently logged back in to the Bourbon Metaverse a year later, essentially. And boy, they still have it up and running and they've been updating it. And they added an entire new museum. It is this giant block museum with these like elevators that take you to different floors and stuff. And the floors are all see-through, so you can see all the exhibits all the way up to the top. And there's like this timeline that goes all the way up the walls and things like that. And they put a lot of like thought into how this place was designed. It wasn't just like a building in like a candy land. It is this very like abstract museum that you go in, and this year is the 100-year anniversary, and so they're like telling you from floor one to the top floor about the 100-year journey of this company, and you know where they started, the people who started it, and then you know every floor is probably about 20 years worth of things, and they're like, hey, you know, this earthquake happened and we helped provide for it kind of thing. And then, you know, here are these different people who ran the company at different times. Here's the production process for different types of snacks. Here's how a character mascot evolved over time through, you know, the years. It's like, I forget his name, Burger Daddy or Burger something. And it's just like, here's the different iterations of the burger guy. And there's like these little videos and things like that too. And they went and added additional, like these little rooms you can sit in, which are like little, you know, restaurants and or cafes kind of thing. And you go to the back room and there's like this little table sitting area. And you can look at various posters that are advertisements. And then you can watch the creation process of how a commercial was made. And the, like the production process and things like that. And so they added all these kind of things around it. And when I logged in this time, there was nobody playing the metaverse. But I don't know how long ago I think it was April 1st was the last update I saw. And part of me was like, was it an April Fool's joke? But logged in, it was like, no, seems like they're still just updating this thing. So I haven't checked in to see like how often the metaverse is being updated. But it's interesting. And they have these giant, like almost, what is it called? The monolith, the big like placard. They have like a bunch of monoliths with just like information on them about the company and stuff. So it's just very, very interesting. And I guess like the weird thing to me is just like that first metaverse was made and yet they continue to move forward with this. And I don't know, maybe they have a contract with whatever company's making this, like have to do it for 1 year. Maybe just they just want to celebrate their company's history. Like sometimes like websites like, you know, the Capcom whatever year anniversary website, Capcom Town or whatever, I have to wonder, like, what is the return on that, right? I mean, at some point, I think somebody in a business probably looks at it and has to put numbers on things and say, like, well, this is going to build customer loyalty, and that's going to translate to numbers. Whether it does or not, it's a whole other thing, right? But I wonder how much of that is an emotional thing, too, right? Like, we are this company, and we want to celebrate what we have done because, you know, companies, look, we talk a lot, like, you can talk a lot about, like, you know, what the company, like at the bottom line, companies are there to make money, right? But they're made up of people, right? That's kind of the thing. It's like when you look at companies, the bottom line is to make money, but they're made up of people. And, you know, along the way, each person's going to have different thoughts and feelings about that company. People are going to have pride about the company. People are going to have resentment towards that company, right? But like, yeah, like how much is it just like, hey, I just feel really good about doing this thing. And I want to like, obviously, we can't have this weird abstract museum in real life for the Bourbon Metaverse or for the Bourbon Snack Company. But hey, we can do it in VR and, you know, that's, we can show our board of like, check this out, check this celebration out for our company and stuff like that. And I think that's kind of interesting. So, but yeah, one change I did notice between the original version and this version is I believe the original version, as you collected coins, I'm trying to remember if I went back and looked at the footage, I'm sure I could check, but I recorded all this, but I think you would collect coins. And as you collected 20 coins at a time, I think you would unlock new outfits. And I think there was like a hard cap on how many coins you could collect each day. So I never got all of them. But basically your character is one of the anime girls. It's the main anime girl, the Lumonde or something, which is like a, I don't know. It's very like these, it's a very like coffee tea kind of snack. It's like very crisp and like airy. And I think you want to kind of dip it in something, and it has like a kind of a, some kind of layer on top of it. I forget what it was, but you play as her and she has a variety of outfits. So her first outfit's just like a t-shirt. And then you kind of upgrade up to like this dress, this fancy dress that's her kind of her standard dress. And then you get little like bear heads that you can stick on your head, and like a little bear that'll hang off your back and stuff. And then eventually you can become one of the chef mascots and stuff. So that stuff would unlock via coins. And in the final version, unless I missed something or maybe somehow unlocked them without realizing it, or maybe they lowered the bar for how to unlock them. It seems like all of them are just unlocked. Or at least, it saved my save data. So all that, my progress in the Bourbon Metaverse was saved and preserved. So, it's just one of those weird things. It's like one of those things that like, I don't know. I think a lot of times I think the big question that sometimes that like this kind of comes back to, I ask why of the Bourbon Metaverse, right? Why is the company doing this? But also, why am I here, right? What drew me to this thing? And it's really hard to answer sometimes, right? Where, like, why am I playing Yoshi Topsy Turvy? Why am I playing Dynasty Warriors on the PSP? And I think I could explain it in the sense of, like, I'm trying to reevaluate portable gaming, and so there's a lot of value to me playing Dynasty Warriors on the PSP versus playing, like, a modern Dynasty Warrior games on a console or something like that, right? And Dynasty Warriors on the PSP has some interesting changes that I think could try to kind of fit the portable environment, right? I think there's a lot of these things where I just ask, why am I doing something? And I think with the Bourbon Metaverse, it was a really hard question to ask. It's like, why am I here? And why am I looking at all this? And why did I unlock all this stuff? And why am I pulling gacha for these wallpapers? Is it just because it's weird? Is it because it's absurd? Or like, is there some value I'm pulling out of this? Like, is it just the sake of like, I'm the one person in the world who's going to talk about the Bourbon Metaverse? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that today, I don't think. And I came back again. I went back to the Bourbon Metaverse. So it's hard to answer that, right? And like in some ways, I don't know that. That's one thing that I think I don't know how apparent that is. I feel like I do try to communicate that stuff, is that sometimes I just don't know why I'm doing the thing I do, right? And then so like, I think people want to hear that justification out of you sometimes about that stuff. And it's like, you don't know the words, right? And it's just like, I don't know what to say to you. I'll say what I think, but that doesn't mean it's accurate, right? And I think I mentioned that in the Babylon's Fall videos. Like, sometimes you just don't have the words for why you engage with something. And it can be a little frustrating if somebody like kind of continually asks you about something and you just can't figure it out. And it's not their fault a lot of times. It's just them kind of like asking. I think as long as they're like, kind and considerate about it, it's perfectly fine. But it is frustrating when like you get the same question over and over and over again, and just like every answer you give seems to fail, right? It's an interesting thing. So what I'm trying to say is, don't ask me about the Bourbon Metaverse. But yeah, I like the Bourbon Metaverse. I think about the Bourbon Metaverse more than I should. I'm glad I revisited the Bourbon Metaverse. Maybe I should go back to the Bourbon Metaverse. Who can say? But I think it's a really interesting little thing, and, I'm glad that they continue to update it, and I hope, somebody is getting something out of it. I did. It's the final Jillian's Corner, guys. Jillian's questions have come to the end. I would have gone back and tried to count how many questions Jillian had sent me, but how I was processing those questions is every time I answered when I deleted it from a list, and I realized as I deleted the final one, I was like, I have no record of these questions. I'm sure I can go find the old where she gave them to me, but so I just deleted the whole file. I was like, okay, well, I guess this is gone, it's empty, it's no good. There actually was one other question. I am jipping you, Jillian. There was one question about spine cards in PlayStation games or CD games. And I will say this, I answered that question in my Japanese games pickups video, the one I got from Japan Retro Direct. I don't know if I mentioned that. I did a pickups video. It's on the OCP Plus channel. I talk about spine cards there, and I'm like, okay, I answered the question elsewhere without the context of Jillian's question. But yeah, so the final Jillian question, I had misread this last time. Because I thought it was like, oh, this question must be old because it's talking about a Nintendo theme park and what you would want from one. But no, the phrasing of this question is, how do you think the new Nintendo theme park looks? So that the theme park had come out. What would you add if you were to, in charge of the park? Now, I think the easiest thing to do here, or the funnest thing, the best thing to do, is we're going to put this park out of business, right? Like I don't want to think about other... I've been thinking about this a lot recently because I was pulling out some old stuff and, like, I branded a lot of things, like, very Zelda-esque a lot of times. Like, if I had a choice between different aesthetic styles, I'd pick Zelda. And I just have no affinity with Zelda anymore. So, like, it's weird to, like, look at something that's like, this is Ben. He identifies with Zelda kind of thing. And I just don't really have, like, a lot of mainline Nintendo identification anymore. So we're going to talk about our favorite video games, my favorite, our favorite is, they're your favorite video games now, whether you like it or not. The YouTube description for this podcast says, I like video games and you will too. it's no longer, this is a demand. So all these games are now your favorite video games. Disaster Day of Crisis. I think this is pretty easy. You put this in, like, you know, you get on, like, the 4D ride, right? Like, you can make heat. You can make things hot, right? You can shake the board around when earthquakes are happening. And then you can spray people while the tsunami's coming and stuff like that. So the natural disaster stuff, I think, fits in there really well. Everybody should get a giant hamburger at the end of it. So similar to, there's, like, a place in here in Vegas called, like, the Heart Attack Cafe or something like that. And they have these huge hamburgers, so you should get a huge hamburger, and you should have to eat it in three bites, like Raymond Bryce does. And also giant cans of soda. Ideally Surge, not because Surge is in Disaster Day of Crisis, but the enemy team is called Surge in the American... I forget. I can't remember if this team is called Surge or Storm. Storm in the Japanese one, Surge in the American one. I think that's right. Anyways, drink a giant can of Surge. That's your Day of Crisis event. Buddy Mission Bond, easy. There's a Tokyo game show I saw once where there was some kind of, like, I think it's a VR game with handsome men stuff, or some kind of VR, you know, maybe not game demo or something, or some kind of spinoff thing. And I think what would happen is, if you were a woman, I don't think you could do this as a man, you could put on a headset and get in bed with somebody, and then in the VR headset it would be the boy across from you, and I'm guessing you're not touching each other, but, like, the feeling of having somebody else in the bed moving around kind of thing. I wonder if that would be, like, an interesting thing with Buddy Mission Bond, of, like, getting in bed with a man. But the thing with Buddy Mission Bond, okay, Buddy Mission Bond has the thing where it's like all these men are paired in a way that is not canonically, like, romantic. Like, these characters, none of these characters actually are romantic with each other, but it's definitely leaning into that, right? It is like they are all on board of doing that. And so, like, I feel like it's something should be more about, like, pairing the men together, right? Because it's Buddy Mission Bond, right? The two guys together. So what can you do with two guys? I think easily as a participant, you know, essentially just get paired up with somebody else and go through. I think that's kind of boring. I don't know. There's a lot of, like, really almost theme park-esque attractions to Buddy Mission Bond in terms of just, like, the ninja castle you go through and solving different puzzles. So I think that would, like, maybe some kind of, like, paired escape room kind of thing. But I feel like I really would want something that really gives you the feeling and energy of, like, the men and the troubles they go through and stuff, and, like, how they connect with one another and stuff like that. I think that's, like, something that's missing from our Buddy Mission Bond attraction, but I don't know. I don't have an answer for it right now. We got other things to go through. If you know how Buddy Mission Bond men should be integrated into a Nintendo theme park, let me know. I feel like I'm thinking about the mechanics of Buddy Mission Bond, but not, like, the spirit of Buddy Mission Bond. I think that's what's missing, right? I don't know. Maybe, like, okay, how about this? You have two, I don't know if it's statues or body pillows of Buddy Mission Bond men, but they are together, and they are hugging each other, right? They're hugging each other, and you get either between them, so they kind of squish you, like, they're not there for you. These men are not there for you. They are there for each other. and they will either envelop you as they envelop each other so you can feel like the pressure between them, right? Or you have to just enjoy it from afar. I don't know the answer to this, but maybe something like that. I feel like that is more in the spirit of Buddy Mission Bond, is like seeing these two men together and enjoying it rather than you being a part of that experience. Not like an Otome game where you have a pink-haired girl protagonist, despite there being a character that basically is like that in the story. Suisan. Hotel Dusk, you know, I think that's pretty easy. Just kind of like go around, explore. What would be unique about that? You know, I think it would be easy enough, I think, to have like basically hotel rooms and two floors. I think it's a two-floor building, and kind of following that landscape and having some kind of like hardware gimmicky puzzles and things like that, right? But yeah, I'm trying to think of like, again, spirit of Hotel Dusk kind of thing, right? I don't know. I don't know what you do. I think, so when I think of Kyle Hyde and how he interacts with people, you know, he's a very standoffish character kind of thing. And so maybe Kyle Hyde needs to be like an actor there, and he needs to be very standoffish with you, but he needs to show he cares about you too. Like, Kyle Hyde needs to care about you, but he also needs to not give a shit about you. So maybe you need an actor that's there, and he's going to guide you through this experience. Or maybe you're assigned a role, right? So, like, you know, there's like the games like Werewolf. Maybe you're assigned a role, and he has to figure out how to pull things out of you that way. And then so you get the experience of Kyle Hyde coming after you. And then you have maybe other tasks you have to do throughout the day. Kind of thing. I don't know. I'm sure none of these are very practical. 1080 snowboarding and wave race. I don't really have a lot to say about that. We're going to skip that one. Metro Prime Hunters. I like the different things. I get 1080 snowboarding wave race. Just put like an arcade game in. I think that's good. Just like have a full body arcade game. Leave it at that. Metroid Prime Hunters, I think you can probably get away with just having like, you know, when you go into like some places in a theme park and it's just like dark lights and like, or dark and like neon lights going on, basically have that. And then have like various sound effects based around different hunters. And maybe each room is like themed after the race of each hunter kind of thing. Right. Maybe something like that. More of like a less interactive and more just like an atmospheric kind of thing. Electroplankton. I feel like Electroplankton could just be like a weird room with a bunch of like weird music making hardware things, but I don't know if that would like overlap with each other a ton. I think that would be kind of fun. Glory of Heracles. Why is this on my list? Oh, I know why. Glory of Heracles. Nintendo published this in the US. I don't think so in Japan. But Glory of Heracles on the DS is a game with a lot of kicking. So a room where you have to go and kick a bunch of things to do it. I don't know. You kick people mostly in Glory of Heracles. I was thinking kicking people in Glory of, or like the Glory of Heracles attraction might not be the greatest idea. So I think that's probably good. Is that a good theme park? I think that's fun. Hopefully that was an interesting final Jillian's Corner. Thank you again, Jillian, for all your support over the years. Thank you again for all your questions over the years. I appreciate it. And I still trying to figure out what would be kind of like the middle period. Did I not think the COVID? Sorry, I'm so caught up in Jillian being the final month for Jillian's Corner. We will talk about Kofi stuff still in the future, so don't worry about that if you like the shout out or whatever. But thank you again, Mega Mint. Thank you again, Demodori, for your support again. Sorry, I haven't made any videos. The tier is literally called Help Me Make Videos, and I have not made a video. But hopefully it's patient. Go check out the OCP Plus channel if you haven't. There's some stuff going on there. I think the Dojin video stuff is entirely unnecessary, but I think is very important to me because I think sometimes unnecessary games need to be talked about. That's something I've been thinking a lot about, of just like, I think it's really important sometimes just talk about games that nobody's talking about. And that doesn't mean the game deserves to be talked about, but I think it means that there's something that's kind of fun about talking about it and something kind of informative about it. And I think maybe the bigger thing for me is like going in and expecting something, even if there's nothing kind of thing, and being okay finding nothing. I think that's maybe the other thing. Obviously, that's not exactly true because Zensis was such a problem for me, but at least Zensis isn't a Dojin game, so at least I'm like, okay, some company actually was trying to think of how this works, and gosh, I'm still all in, my stomach's still all in knots about Zensis. But thank you again, Mega Mint, Demodori, and Jillian, for your support of all times, and we'll figure out what we're doing next time, or I'll figure something out. Worst case scenario, I've been asking a lot of questions on Twitter. I think it'd be fun to kind of review some of those questions and talk about those a little bit, because I got a lot of feedback on them, and I think it'd be fun to kind of just like formalize that and put that in a way that like, you know, I can come back and listen to it later if I want to, or pass that information along to you. I know we're like an hour in. I'm going to try to keep this short, but I think it's going to be somewhat long. We're talking about fighting games. Last time in my fighting game saga, last year, I don't remember what time frame it is. It's probably getting close to a year. I went to Evo. The reason I went to Evo was a couple of reasons, but one of the big things was fighting games are a genre I don't think I know how to appreciate. When I play a fighting game, I am still at my 5-year-old self playing Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo on the Super Nintendo. What I want to do? I want to do the Hadouken, and I want to do the heavy kick. Why? Because the Hadouken, A, looks cool, B, is a projectile, but also, two, I don't remember how I was numbering these, but second, the heavy kick does a lot of damage and knocks a guy down, right? That is my fighting game brain place for fighting games. And it's kind of been that for a long time. Smash Brothers is kind of a different thing. I don't want to get too deep into that. We might talk about Smash Brothers today. But yeah, that's been a lot of my fighting game experience. So when I play a fighting game, what am I doing? I'm finding a character's Hadouken equivalent, and I'm finding that heavy kick equivalent. And what I do is I use that to play through the campaign, get the two sentences of story that they have, and then say, wow, that was a fighting game, and I will try to find things about that I appreciate. And there's some games that got me to go beyond that, right? Dead or Alive was a franchise that I think was really good about making like button combos that weren't real combos. So like, you know, they didn't actually connect in a way that the player couldn't respond to them in a way that like a traditional quote combo would be in fighting games. Those still feel good, even if you're not comboing. They still feel like they flow into each other. Dead or Alive feels like a game where if you're button mashing or whatever, it will still feel and look cool versus like a game like Virtua Fighter that doesn't work, or even Street Fighter 2 that doesn't really work. And so that's kind of where I've been with video games mentally. That's really all the development I've had is I played some games where I'm like, cool, this is kind of neat. And like it makes it flow, but that's the game doing that, right? That's not me doing that. And so I went to Evo, I think trying to figure out, this genre clearly has so much more going on, right? What is going on? And talking to people and trying to get an understanding of what's happening. And there's kind of two things that came up at Evo that year. I'll try to keep this short. Is that fighting games are divided up into two, well, not fighting games themselves. A fighting game is divided up into kind of two major things. One is combo game. And one is, I guess, mind games or reading games kind of thing. And so when we think of the combo part, that's where, you know, you think about, okay, what is an input to do? You know, what are the series of inputs I do to basically string enough attacks together, right? And part of that as well, I think when we think of more casual people like myself, when I think of the combo game, one of the parts of that too is also the button combinations to do moves, right? It's not about each move connecting to each other. It also is about this button combination doing to do moves kind of thing. So, you know, doing a Hadouken with like the whatever the input is, I don't even know off the top of my head. You know, doing the inputs for doing like an uppercut and stuff like that, these special moves that these characters have that are not just the standard punch, kick or whatever, right? And so that's combo game. And combo games in some ways have kind of simplified over time because I think the general sentiment around them seems to be connecting the moves is more important. Putting in the button combinations to do a Hadouken, not so important. So you have games with abilities that you can just press a button and then essentially it will do that move automatically. There's also stuff like Dragon Ball FighterZ where you press the buttons and that's more about connecting the moves together. So automatically do that combo. So the bigger thing is, so the combo game in a lot of ways has been kind of worn away for better or for worse. I feel like most of the community seems to today accept that it is a better change. I'm sure that some people are still disappointed by it. I think every change in design, you know, is going to ruffle some feathers. But I think the bigger thing, I think there's most of the community seems to recognize the benefit of increased accessibility and taking away the need per se for these things. But, you know, I still think, you know, when we think of like Dragon Ball Fighter Z or something like that, where we just literally press a button and the combo comes out automatically, I think that's still not necessarily the case in all games. And I don't know fighting games well enough to tell you which games do what, that kind of thing. So, and the other thing about that they talked about, and so that's the part of fighting games I think is pretty easy for anybody to see, right? You can see a bunch of you see a character juggling the other character across the screen. The health bar keeps going down. That's easy to read. What's the harder thing to figure out is the mind game aspect or reading the other player kind of thing. And I think it is pretty straightforward to say when you're playing a fighting game, obviously you have options available to you. And when you do something, you're going to react to the other player, right? And so, you know, I think it's very natural for us when we play games to do actions, change actions, try different things to try to see, you know, what is the best option that we have, or if an option is just straight up not working, trying to find what the right solution is to a problem, right? And so there's a lot of that in games that exists already. But I think in the case of a fighting game, it is a very, the hard thing was like understanding what people were seeing in terms of the depth of it, I think is the hard part to see, because it's very easy to say, yes, you're going to react to the other player. But I think when you ask the question of how you're reacting to the other player and what that means in fighting games, that seems to be a challenging thing to answer, I think. And so when I talk to people at Evo, no one really had a good answer for me. They basically just would sum it as the mind game and leave it at that. And if I asked for more details, usually they're just kind of like, well, just, you know, if you defend or if you block or attack or something like that, right? So I think what I was trying to ask them, and maybe I put the question wrong, was like, what is the essence of the mind game and what makes it appealing, right? I think that's maybe the big thing that I've still lacked kind of thing. So I'm not saying you're going to have the answer to all these things today, but that was kind of where I left off last year. And I played a little bit of fighting games. I was like, I don't know what to do about this. So whatever. So recently, I started playing a fighting game that came out. It was right off the heels of me playing Granblue Fantasy Relink. I have no connection to the Granblue Fantasy world. I don't think it looks interesting. I don't think the characters are great, from my opinion. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just nothing about it jumps out at me. It's not something that I'm like, oh, man, this world. Just, like, nothing about it reads to me as interesting. That doesn't mean it's not, you know, I think the problem you have with mobile games and or really any live service game you have is, like, from the outside, it can be really hard to understand the appeal of something. And then the people who invest time, money, energy into these worlds and fully experiencing them, it becomes really hard to close the gap between that character player who doesn't know anything about that world and the player who knows way too much about that world. And I think that's true for MMOs is really where I think a lot about that. Explaining the appeal of the story of Final Fantasy XI is a very challenging thing, I think. And I think is really hard because there's a lot of hurdles a player has to overcome to appreciate the story of Final Fantasy XI, especially at the time when it came out. But World of Warcraft, similar thing. There's a ton of lore about this thing. But anyways, that being said, I just don't really have a lot of interest. But a friend of mine was playing it at the time. There was a new update with 2B came out or something from Nier. They added the character from Nier to the game. I don't think there's any other characters in that game from other games, so it's very strange to me. And then also I had a friend group that was kind of playing around with the idea of actually checking it out as well. And so I was like, okay. I've been wondering about this. It's here in front of me. People I know are playing this game. Let me check it out. And it was very difficult up front for sure. So I think when I jumped into Granblue Fantasy Relink, first and foremost, there's a lot of weird things about Granblue Fantasy Versus. Like, there's a lot of weird things about Granblue Fantasy Versus that I feel like are just not in traditional fighting games. One is it has kind of like a Smash Brothers style combo system. So, like, you can do the Hadouken motion, but you also can just, like, press a button and then the as a simplified, like, special system, basically, where you don't have to put in a button combination to do a special move if you don't want to. And I did utilize that. I'm usually not the type to utilize that, but I did go ahead and use it just to, like, I was just trying to lower the barrier to entry to me as much as possible, because I wasn't really concerned about the mind or the combo game. I was really concerned about the mind game part of it. That's really what I wanted to see the essence of more than anything kind of thing. And so I really kind of started playing it a little bit. It took me a while to find a character I actually liked, and I don't think I ever found a character I really enjoyed. I forgot to mention there's like a cooldown system as well. So like depending on the strength of the move you use, if you use like a harder hitting version of a move, it can create a cooldown where you can't use that move for a while and stuff like that. So I kind of bounced around characters for a while, and just, I don't know, maybe it's because I just don't care about the Grand Blue Fantasy world or cast or what, but like I just couldn't stick with anyone. But there's one character I did like called Zoe. Apparently not a very good character, at least everyone told me that, but I was like, whatever, I kind of like the moveset. I think she moves a little slower, or maybe her animations just feel slower, and so it feels a little easier to read overall, but she's kind of like this little pet dragon kind of thing. So I started playing Zoe, you know, I think this is true. I think I've always felt this way about fighting games, is that the ceiling, they have a really high competitive ceiling, right? They're basically an esport, right? When you think of fighting games. And so it's like, there's a really high bar you can get to. And there's a lot of, it's a long journey of self-improvement, right? I think that is what fighting games are in a lot of ways. It is this journey of self-improvement. I think to some extent, I've always felt that way. And I think in a lot of ways, it's a bit more admirable than like, say, like an MMO where you're kind of following this track and, you know, I shouldn't bring an MMO conversation into this, but I think MMOs are kind of like an easier way of getting that, right? We're going to see the number go up, right? And I feel like when it comes to something like a fighting game, it is less about the number going up and more about your skill going up, right? It's the thing people talked about with Dark Souls a lot, Monster Hunter a lot, stuff like that, I think. I think that is like a big part of fighting games, is the journey of self-improvement in a lot of ways. But what happens, I think, that doesn't happen in some other types of games is I feel like the expectations of you being a competitive player, in the sense of like you are going to learn the meta game of what's happening here that's beyond just the traditional rule set of a fighting game, gets really, really, really put in front of you real fast. And I guess what that means is that when you're playing this, it's a pretty short period of time where you're playing this game in a way that, like, casually, I think makes sense, right? When you're being, you know, playing a character that's basically going to do, you're just going to do the cool moves, right? You're just going to do the things that feel good to do. And then once you start like really sitting down to think about like what your character is and how you can use them, it gets pretty quick into like, oh, there's a lot of knowledge you need to know to really be able to do anything in this game any further, right? And I feel like when it comes to like shooters and things like that, that is a more soft curve, right? As your reflexes improve and things like that, you kind of steadily go up this kind of path. And it's a very soft curve that gets you to that ultimately high competitive level, right? I feel like a lot of people playing shooters don't go in with the expectation that they're going to be able to compete in a major way. At least that's not the culture around it, right? I feel like for fighting games, whether it be a perception thing or a reality thing on my part, I don't know. But I feel like that ceiling is a lot lower. And part of the problem I had was when I very early started asking questions from other friends, because when you play Grand Blue Fantasy, there's a training mode and like a character guide thing that kind of gives you the basics of your character and stuff. But it's pretty clear that the tools they give you are pretty inadequate for teaching you anything beyond just like, here's a character and here's like kind of the general uses, in terms of like explaining to the player, right? So when you go into a training mode, there'll be like these boxes that turn on and these values. And to someone like me who doesn't know what any of this stuff is, like just looking at it, I'm just like, I don't know what this is, and I don't know what the value of it is, right? I would not be surprised if there's like a description in the game somewhere that's like, hey, this is what this value is, right? But like at least on the surface level, I look at it and I'm like, this is not A, none of this makes sense. B, it's in a training mode where there's nothing going on. I'm just standing here. And like, that's part of my personality to some extent, right? Like when I play shooters, like I have had groups of people I played with who are like, oh, let's go into the shooting range and practice our shooting. And I'm just like, that's the most boring thing I've ever heard in my life. And I'll sit there and shoot, but like, I am desperate for us to get out of that shooting range as much as possible. I don't want anything to do with that. But so I think in a lot of ways, like training mode and fighting games is the same thing for me. I'm just like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be looking at this. I don't want to worry about like, I don't want to think about like, oh, what is the best like in the context of a shooting range in a shooter, like what is the best close range, highest DPS thing, right? I don't care about that, right? I know a shotgun's good for close range. I know like a short submachine gun is like kind of the same space, and I'll pick out as I play what makes the most sense to me, right? Like I'll figure it out as I go through and play. And I feel like in fighting games, that expectation might be that you go into the training mode and you figure those things out before you go and actually play the game. I don't know this is actually true, but you know, I was talking to my friends about stuff, and they kind of had two approaches. What almost always happens when I play with like friends on fighting games and stuff is that immediately a bunch of jargon comes out, and so they'll tell you like eight things with eight different words, and you're like, I don't process information, like new information like that quickly or fast. And so I'm just like, what the frick did that, what were they trying to say? And so I'm like sitting there like processing, like, okay, they said EX on Genki using like 536. Like, what am I hearing? It's just like, and like, it's just strange because like, I feel like I am somebody who like when I present myself, it is like, I am stupid, man. Please give me information. And it's like this weird like thing. And so it's like this weird frustration that happens on like, I feel like on both sides where like, I'm just in there like, I just need something that's not this. And then they're like, well, I need to find the words that convey to you what I'm trying to explain, kind of thing. And like trying to find the language. And like, it's kind of weird because like, I had multiple instances of this across like multiple friends where they'll like, they would explain a term to me, and it was a lot of information about a term that just meant like to stand up, right? And I'm sure there's reasons why the term exists and why it got to where it was and stuff like that. But like, there's this long explanation of what this means and the context of it and what it's used for. And it's important, I think, at some point to know that. But sometimes it's just like, I just need to know what this word is even like implying in the first place, right? And so I'd be like, oh, I think Genki's the way. I don't know if Genki's actually the word. But like, and I get this big long explanation for a word that I heard once. And then like for the next 30 hours, I did not hear again. So it's just like, and don't take these terms as accurate, because I still don't know a lot of the terms for this stuff. Because in some ways, I kind of intentionally started blocking it out because I was just like, this is crazy the way these get talked about. And I think to some extent, you know, when you look at the fighting game community, it's this very tight-knit community. There's a competitive scene. You know, jargon is not bad, right? Jargon is used in those situations where you have, you know, somebody who is trying to quickly convey something to another person that's in the know, right? It's the same reason we use genres, right? You know, you go to like grandma and say, it's an action adventure game, grandma. And like, grandma doesn't know what that means, right? Grandma's just like, okay, right? It's a similar thing. Like, so jargon, genres, things like that, they kind of rely on both people knowing the information and having a shared understanding, right? And like, using the right words and stuff, I think as long as the two players know what's being talked about, that's what's most important. And so setting those guidelines is important, right? But yeah, it is just one of those things that like, from an outsider's perspective, it's just like very intimidating. And I think one of the things as well is just like, you know, I know a lot about video games, right? And I've spent a lot of my life playing videos. I've spent a lot of my life playing fighting games. And just like, these terms just were never really in my purview ever, right? And so it's interesting that there's just this layer of terms that goes beyond what a normal video game is, right? And goes beyond that. And so I thought that was like kind of an interesting thing. And in some ways I feel a little bad because I in some ways started to kind of intentionally put up some barriers to be like, I'm curious how this conversation's going to go. I'm not going to learn this term. You figure out how to convey this to me. And if you were one of those people listening, I'm sorry. It's just like, sometimes that is just like, I just want to see how this goes. And it's valuable, right? Because you see this kind of like thing of somebody trying to figure out like, how do I convey this in a way that actually makes sense, right? And like the different verbiage and terms that gets used. And like, in like me not learning these terms is a problem. Cause like, I will sit there and even today be like, the backflip move. And like, three of my moves look like a backflip, right? So it's like, well, okay, well, what does that mean, right? And so like the jargon is helpful and stuff. And there's some things that like seem to be more based off like history. The one thing, there's like this numbering system for moves. So like, it'll be like, oh, 6-3 5L for like putting in these directions and pressing the light attack button. So like, so when somebody says, you know, in video games, there's a dash attack, right? And so, in fighting games, is typically not all of them, it's like a light, medium, and heavy attack that each have their own use. And so, you know, the light attack is the fast attack, right? And so in this game, there's like a dash attack and then you light. And when you look at the patch notes of the game, they say, okay, this is dash light, right? And that makes sense to me. Okay, you're dashing and you're using a light attack. That makes a lot of sense to me. On paper, obviously, if you saw the word dash light with no context, then that's another thing. But the community like describes that as like 66L. And what that means is if you look at like a numpad on a keyboard, 66 is the right key on that, right? And you look at the like 8, 4, 5, 6, 2, that's a D-pad. And then 7, 9, 1, 3 are like the corners, right? And so that kind of thing. And so it is just one of those things that like, if you don't have the context for like a numpad, like ready off the top of your head, it is incredibly confusing to hear those numbers like read out. Like a problem I have, still have in all this, and I don't know if this is like a dyslexia thing or something. My whole family has dyslexia and I've never really felt like I've had it, but who knows? But like in my head, the numpad's flipped. So when I think about a numpad, A, I don't know what a numpad looks like. Well, I know what a numpad looks like. I don't know what the number layout is. And so my brain says, well, it's probably one of two things. It's probably 1 to 9, bottom left to top right, or 1 to 9, top left to bottom right. And so I don't know which one it is. And my brain will default to, well, one is the first number, and the top left position on that numpad is probably the right one. Now, I think now I know that that's not true. And so when my brain has to figure that out, I flip it because I automatically know the logical thing to me is actually not true. I need to flip it kind of thing. So yeah, so it's like this understanding that you know the numpad kind of thing, right? And I think, I don't know, honestly, like across the board, like how many people know what a numpad's numbering scheme is, right? I know what a numpad is. I use it, but like I don't use it. I don't think about the numbers most of the time. It's usually like, it's mostly used playing Final Fantasy XI where you never once think about the numbering on the keys. You only press the buttons, right? And I've had to explain to somebody how to move in Final Fantasy XI. Have a good time with that. So yeah, it's really interesting to see just like the language of fighting games and how like in some ways I think there's just like this immediate wall that gets kind of put up there. But I think there's this problem that the games themselves have as well. And I don't know how true... Well, actually, let me roll back. So, you know, there's this... I'm trying to think of how I want to approach this topic. Let's keep going with what I was saying. So there's kind of this part of fighting games where, you know, I think it's pretty easy to assume, you know, if you use like a light attack, it's going to be the faster attack, right? If you use a medium attack, it's going to be kind of mid, and then heavy is going to be the slowest attack, but you'll do the most damage, right? And that's kind of the basic foundation of a lot of this stuff where it's like, if somebody's using a heavy attack, if you want to counter them and like, you know, hit them before they hit you, use a light attack, right? Obviously there's the option to block or whatever kind of thing as well. And there's that kind of thing going on. And that's kind of like the baseline, I feel like. And I think everyone can pretty quickly, easily understand that concept, right? I think there's a lot of weird rules, though. And this is where I think fighting games, I think, a lot of times feel inadequate in giving a ignorant player information on identifying these rules. Because there's a lot of things where it's like, this light attack will beat this light attack, right? And then there'll be like, cause a character just has a faster light attack kind of thing. Right. Which there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a matter of like, there's not really any information to convey that other than you get hit and you learn. And I think that's a reasonable one for the most part, like, especially when it comes to just like normal light attacks and stuff like that, where you're just like punching the other person. If another character is just kind of aimed to be faster in that regard, I think you can pretty easily pick up on that and win or figure that out. Right. But there's a lot of really weird rules about like, oh, when a character does this, they can't be hit at this time. Or when you do this, you can't use this next move or else it won't hit. And so I think the most basic example of this is in fighting games, there's a grab, right? So you can grab the other player and then throw them down kind of thing. And the kind of the key idea behind a grab is that the other player is blocking. And so when they're blocking, you know, they can just block all your attacks. So you can go and grab them and throw them to the ground or whatever, and you'll deal damage. So you're basically punishing them for blocking too much and then not kind of striking back at you or not taking advantage of you, you know, using a move that kind of leaves you open kind of thing. So grab is like used for that, to throw players like down to the ground, basically, or basically throw them off you, do a little bit of damage, but ultimately you're taking control of the situation, right? But when you grab, there's a lot of like rules around grabbing and how it works. So it's like, oh, when a character just blocked an attack, you can't grab them at that time. Or that character just like stood up, you can't grab them at that time. And so there's, again, nothing wrong with that. I think that there's always going to be these weird edge case situations when you play a lot of games. You just kind of live and learn with it, a lot of it. But a lot of times, I think there's just this, the rate and speed of which fighting games go is so fast, it's really hard to digest what happened in that situation. And the game doesn't really seem to try to give you any information of like, hey, in this situation, a character's like invulnerable, right? And so like how a fighting, or how a game generally conveys that information, right, is a character like flashing, right? They're flashing, they can't be hit. But the problem is with that approach is that you can hit them with other things. So like specifically the grab doesn't work, right? And so you don't know if you were just too far for the grab to work. Were they still standing up, and in the stand up animation where they can't be grabbed? Because it's not that you can't grab them like as they're standing up. It is when they're standing up in a certain time frame, you still cannot grab them, right? And so it's like a lot of these like weird things, that just like these weird little things on the sides of these parts of the game, that at least when you're just playing the game naturally, going and not like going the training mode and watching all these boxes light up depending on different situations and stuff, it's just not there. Like, it's just not something visible to the player. And I think most of the time, as a player, the way I interpret that is, I did something wrong on my side, but I don't get the information that that character could not be grabbed because of this special rule, right? I don't understand that situation in that thing. So, like, the thing is that, you know, I have these other people who I'm playing these fighting games with, and they have to kind of step in and explain that to me. And maybe somewhere in the text of Grand Blue Fantasy, it explains this mechanic. But again, none of this is like surfaced to the player in a way that like is player would just stumble across this information through the game. Whether it be, you know, one thing I think a lot about is like how shooters convey certain types of information, where it's like, okay, Apex Legends is a great example, where you have a shotgun, right? And, you know, if you know how a shotgun works, you shoot the shell and the shell kind of like busts open, essentially. And instead of, you know, getting shot by a single bullet top, there's this spread of metal bullets, essentially, that come out of a shotgun, right? And how that spread is, in a video game term at least, is almost never consistent, right? Or at least like when you think of a competitive games, it's not consistent in how it shoots. And so as someone who doesn't know anything about guns, like, I don't know what a shotgun spread looks like. I don't know what's reasonable, and every game treats it differently. But in Apex, there's these like nice little cursors that appear when you hit somebody. So you can see the little red dots that are like, you hit somebody with like 5 of the metal bullets that came out of this thing. And so like, it gives you this information as you're playing the game. And so you can kind of like tweak and adjust your play style based around the information it's providing you. And like the other thing I talk about is like bullet drop, right? And these more like stylized shooters, when you shoot a sniper round, usually what happens is you have this big long bullet trail that goes across. And so when you shoot a bullet, you know, eventually it starts losing velocity in real life and the bullet falls. And in real life, there's no real like path or anything like that. You, as a soldier, have trained yourself to better understand that going to a shooting range, right? But in a video game, where you're just playing the video game, you know, you play like PUBG, maybe this is not the case. I wouldn't be surprised if PUBG's like, learn it. But in like Apex, there's a bullet trail that goes and it falls, right? It falls down and you could see it fall. And so like, it's communicating to the player, hey, this is happening, right? And so like that kind of information, I feel like, could be valuable in a fighting game sense. The issue is, I think the complexity of what's happening on a mind game level is just a lot more, there's a lot more happening and there's a lot more variables. So it's like this character you're fighting has a lot more different parameters going on than you know, just shooting a gun and like you initiating an action, and then basically the only thing that matters is, did you hit the thing, right? Like the game only cares, did you hit the person? It doesn't care about anything else. It's not like, oh, did they just stand up? We're not giving them bullet invulnerability while they're standing up. Did you hit the person, right? Where in the case of fighting games, there's a lot of these like weird little tricks and things like that to add either defenses against like certain things being exploited, or to add additional depth in terms of like, you know, how certain moves can be used to like resolve different situations. And so I think ultimately what happens is fighting games become this very complex mess that are very difficult to interpret because the number of options are really high. And that the options available change very easily just by one character in the match being changed, right? So I'm trying to think like where I'm going with this kind of thing, but I think there, if you don't know anybody and you don't want to go look on Reddit, if I didn't know it, let's put me in these shoes, right? Because we're talking about this from my perspective, and my perspective is I don't want to be in training mode at all. That sounds super boring, and I'm not going to enjoy this video game if I'm getting in training mode. I'm here to have fun, and you know, I don't necessarily care about being competitive per se. I'm here to have a good time, and competitiveness, I think, goes into that, but I want to have a good time most of the time, not sit in a training mode, and I don't get a lot of satisfaction from figuring out combos and things like that. I don't get a lot of that kind of feeling. And then so your options, if you're not going to do that, are talk to other people, which is really what I ended up doing, and then also research online. So talking to other people, we kind of talked about how communication's a really hard thing to do because of all the jargon and stuff like that. And I think there's also just this really big difference in like the concepts of what's happening in a fighting game versus a normal fighting game at times, even though a lot of them are very similar, but I think the scope of those differences is very different. It like actually communicating those things, I think, is really hard. And so I think what happens, and I was thankful that I had different groups of people talking to me about this because it let me see different ways that people were trying to accommodate this. Cause like Evo, nobody really could like convey that information at the time, from my memory, at least. I didn't record those things, so I can't like go back and look at them. I did have the old podcast. I asked some people on Twitter, and the conversations on Twitter mostly framed around Street Fighter VI and like the tutorial mode in Street Fighter VI. And I like for the life of me could not remember anything about Street Fighter VI's tutorial mode. I don't think I went in there, so maybe it does some interesting stuff. I can tell you the story mode didn't do a very good job of teaching me anything, but you know, I don't know. I don't know what I was trying to get out of Street Fighter VI other than just, hey, here's a cool campaign. But anyways, I wanted to know about Ryu's relationship with Ken's credit card more. That was like the thing I wanted most out of that game, was like more character interactions with the Street Fighter characters and have those character actions feel more like a part of the story than like little lore bits that you get instead. That being said, so Twitter, I asked some questions. I don't really feel like I got a lot of responses, but maybe I'll follow back up on that with you guys, if I bring those Twitter questions into the podcast at some point. But I had one group that was like, here's the wiki, here's the information. Admittedly, I will say they had not played nearly as much Grand Blue Fantasy as the other group I was talking with. But in that situation, there's this very like hard, I don't know if rhetoric is the right word, but there is this thing of just like, if you don't want to learn the game, you can't appreciate fighting games. And I'll tell you right now, one of the worst ways to get me to do anything is tell me don't do it. Especially if you tell me that there's a right way to do something and it is something that is not like life threatening. I'm going to be like, oh, really? I'm going to not do that, which is kind of where a lot of the like me putting up walls about jargon stuff came from, because like people were just like making a whole fuss about it in that group. And so like, it was just this thing of like, you're not going to enjoy fighting games if you don't sit here and like learn these tables about your character. And I was like, this sounds awful. This is like basically, do you want to learn a language? Which I'm sure fighting games has a higher depth than most video games and probably gets closer to that range of self-improvement through learning a language, right? I think there's probably some connection there in terms of how you build yourself up. And, you know, the challenges the world brings to you gives you the opportunity to kind of like flex that language, and you kind of learn from that experience, say, what do I want to do to improve from that, right? I think a lot of self-improvement stuff comes from that. But it is one of those things where it was just this very like hard line, learn the charts. And there's a lot of numbers on these charts, and it seems like they want you to learn the charts of other characters. And what these charts mostly had were basically, from what I understand as somebody who'd never really looked at them, were speed values, essentially. There are some other things on there like, hey, you are invulnerable at this time during this move, yada, 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 stuff that's just overly complicated for this conversation. But the main thing seemed to be the speed values of moves, I think, because I think what happens is there's a value of speed assigned to a move, and people know the speeds of those moves. So you need to use a move that is a faster speed overall. So you have light, medium, and heavy, and each of those are divided into their own category. This is my baseline understanding of it. I don't know if this is actually right, but this is my baseline understanding. So it's like study this chart, learn this chart, learn your fastest move, know in these situations against this character that these moves are going to be the best thing for you, kind of thing. And, you know, I think, I will say this. I think I took it probably more harsh than they probably were delivering it to me. So that's one thing. But yeah, and it just was like, it's just like, this is the most, like, if you're going to get me to stop playing a fighting game, this is the way you're going to do it, right? It kind of feels like anytime anyone like tries to teach you something, if they give you a hard structure of what to do, right? Or they tell you what you have to do to even consider something. I was in a situation with Final Fantasy XI recently where I was in a group talking to somebody, and some guy was like, I want to try the Bard class. And one of the guys in the chat got on this whole thing about like, oh, you want to play Bard? Well, let me tell you, you're going to need this much money because you'll need this gear, blah, 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 blah. And it was like the best gear in the game. And the guy was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't play Bard. And I'm like, shut up. This game is designed around you buying whatever armor you want, and your abilities will work whether you have. I mean, there are some baseline considerations, but not you need the top tier gear to even be considered a bard in this game. Like, that's so dumb. And I don't like that stuff. And I feel like whenever people start prescribing you things, it starts getting like, oh my God, leave me alone. Like, I just have like a natural abhorrentness to that now. Just like, I don't want that. Like, and I think a lot of that might come from like school, and like the things that I learned in school were things that were very rarely out of like a textbook program kind of thing, right? I feel like there's a lot of things I learned in life that came through other methods of learning. You know, my best teachers were teachers that I think embraced the ways you wanted to learn and ultimately tried to do that, right? And then I think that is kind of the thing that I think a lot about, is just like all these situations where I get like provided a structured thing of have to do's, very rarely do they work for me. I need something that's going to work with me. And even with therapy, this was part of the initial problem. Like, I started going to therapy in October and didn't really get anywhere until February. And it was because I kept getting prescribed these things I should do when I really needed to figure out what I need to do on my own. And once I figured that out, I was like, oh, this is so easy. And like my therapist was like, yeah, like, yeah, you figured it out. You figured out what you needed. So I think that's like where you ever see me push hard back on those things. I think that is like where a lot of that comes from. So thankfully, I think like the other group I was interacting with about this stuff was a lot more, I think, more relaxed about it. And I think the thing that helped me the most of the time was, hey, let's play some. And then just play, and then be like, hey, work on this. You did this a lot. You use this move a lot. Maybe do it less, because it's really easy for me to hit you back in that move. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't use the move, just don't do it as much. And I think, like, over time, what happens is the more and more you get that advice of, like, hey, just don't do this, right? Like, hey, I'm going to give you, I'm not telling you to do what you want, but I'm telling you, you probably should stop. And like, here's the reason why. And like, and then like maybe giving some suggestions of like, maybe you can use like one of these things in this situation. Like, here's one of these other options for you, right? I think that was like more valuable, and it makes it easier for you to, I think, or for me to identify those problems myself later, right? And it's like, I'm using this move and getting punished for it every time because the person knows I'm going to use that move and they know which move they have that will counteract that, right? And like, just being able to figure that out, like play by play, game by game, I think is a lot more valuable than going and like memorizing a chart about something and trying to learn all these theories about like what is the best response in certain situations. I think more it's just like, hey, you're having a hard time with this. Maybe try this kind of thing. I think in my opinion, that like was significantly more helpful to me than anything I got from the other group with that stuff. So if you're from that other group and listening, I'm sorry. I think part of it's my own fault. Like I said, I kind of artificially started putting up barriers because I was just like, oh, you're going to say that? Well, I'm going to play it this way now. I get that way sometimes. Like if somebody tells me you can't do something, I'm just like, well, screw you. I'm going to do it. I don't know what part of me is makes me do that, but that's how it goes. So please don't do that as a way to bait action out of me. I prefer it not. I bet you won't smoke a cigarette, Ben. Watch me. You're so fat. So yeah, I think that's a big thing. I think a lot of that's that. But yeah, I think the bigger thing, I think at the end of the day, is like, I think having a community that informs you is helpful, but I think unless a game is willing to bring some of those elements down to the player, in a way that it's like more readable to them or more informative to them, or like in the case of the Street Fighter 6 mode, how do you bring those things that are important about your fighting game into the game itself and teach the player and make sure the player knows what they're trying to do, right? Because I feel like at times Street Fighter 6 was trying to teach you things when you're like, you know, fighting a refrigerator who's like doing a certain move over and over and over again. It's like, okay, how do you deal with the projectile essentially, right? Being sent at you over and over again. It's trying to teach you that. But I think they're formalizing a little bit more. And I think a little bit, I always come back to Shenmue and like Shenmue's dojo. And the Shenmue dojo, you know, it's this kind of like story-based side quest thing where you have different characters kind of that you're trying to overcome. And through, you know, your trainings each day, it ultimately kind of results in you going and kind of getting to take over that character. Shenmue 3 specifically I'm talking about. Does Shenmue 3 have the depth that actually like plays out in a way that you need to do that? Probably not. You probably can just punch your way through Shenmue 3. But you know, when I'm playing Shenmue, I'm about immersion, baby. So if the guy says, you're going to learn this kick today, I'm like, yeah, baby, I'm going to learn this kick today. And I'm going to spend half my afternoon doing the kick over and over and over again, because I'm Ryo Hazuki. And after this, I'm going to go open drawers and look for stuff in drawers in somebody's house. So, and I'm just going to be there in the person. I'm going to talk to somebody. I'm going to give someone's cat some milk. Ryo Hazuki, baby, the solution to all of our problems. But I think one thing that I do want to touch on before we wrap this up, I know this has been a long podcast, I'm sorry, is this weird disconnect I had when I was talking about kind of like exposing these kind of layers of fighting games to the player in a more readable way. Like I said, it's incredibly complicated. I'm not saying I have the answers here of how it works. Like I said, I think shooters have the benefit of, you know, the player is doing an action and is largely in control of that action. And the response is, does that player get hit? Where this game, there's a lot more going on. It's a lot more direct combat to combat with somebody. And the split second decision making is significantly higher with fighting games. But there's all this thing that like, I would like to have this information more upfront to the player, right? And there's some things in training mode that I think could be helpful about, you know, color coding certain attacks and things like that. In the training mode, it's very ugly. It's just like a block kind of thing, which is fine for training mode. But I think there's some things you could probably do to like, you know, have like, oh, light attacks have this color, or medium attacks have this color, and heavy attacks have this color kind of thing, right? That's not to say that's going to solve the problems of this game, just like those kind of things. It's something that I think when I say that, what often the response I get is, well, I don't want a simpler game. And it's like, well, I'm not saying I want the game to be simpler. I'm saying I want more information. And the thing I kind of think about a lot with this is Phantasy Star Online. I've been playing that a lot recently. Maybe I'll make a video about it. Hopefully. The script is like halfway done, but I'm thinking about reworking it. But when you play Phantasy Star Online, one of the key things about Phantasy Star Online is there's a 3-hit combo. Every weapon, 3-hit combo. It might have multiple hits in the combo, but you need to press that A button 3 times. A to start it, B to continue it, third time to continue it, which finishes it, basically. And the timing on the 3-hit combo per character, per weapon, is actually different. It's really interesting, actually, that they like went out of their way to make every character's animations unique. And so how each weapon interacts with the character is like different in ways that isn't very apparent to the player in any meaningful way. But anyways, Phantasy Star Online stuff aside, but you'd have to do this 3-hit combo. And if you don't know how to do that combo, if you're just smashing the A button, it doesn't work. You have to time it correctly. And if you don't know that, what you'll see, if you can tell when somebody doesn't know how they're playing, how to play Phantasy Star Online, is they'll press the A button and they'll do one strike and then they'll go back to their neutral stance and do that over and over and over again. And so what Phantasy Star Universe, kind of the main sequel to this Phantasy Star Online did initially, was they took away the timing element. 3-hit combo is still there for most weapons, but you could just mash the button. And it took something away from that, right? In Phantasy Star Universe, that simplified the 3-hit combo system. And I think that is a case of me saying, here's this mechanic. This is a very simple mechanic overall, but you know, I think I'm trying to keep a simple explanation here. It's like, here's this mechanic. There's a benefit to the timing aspect. There's a satisfaction to the player of timing the button hits, even though it's a very minor thing. And that is like a weirdly key part of this game, kind of thing. And then when you say, oh, people have trouble with that, what do? Take it out. I don't think that's the right answer, because Phantasy Star Universe is like, the original Phantasy Star Universe doesn't feel great to play. And they do kind of keep this thing of like, you can always just mash the button going forward in the future games, but I kind of wish they didn't, but it's not a huge deal, because what happened is, in the later versions, is instead of saying, okay, there's no timing, they add the timing back in. Again, you can still mash, but in the case of this, there's like a damage buff to the 3-hit combo, essentially. But let's ignore that part of it and just say you have to do 3-hit combo as you did in the original game. And there's a little yellow circle that comes in, and it shows the timing of that 3-hit button combo. And I think that's what I'm asking for, right? I'm asking for some kind of detail in the game that says, hey, this is here. Here's the moment you interact with it. Go for it, baby. Like that kind of thing, right? I think that's what I'm looking for. But I get a lot of these responses that are like, I don't want fighting games to be simplified. And I'm like, well, I don't want the fighting game to be simplified. I just want more information. But like I said, information is incredibly complex in fighting games from what I'm finding. But I don't think you need the game to tell you everything, though. I think that is like kind of unreasonable. Like I was mentioning earlier, like the plus, you know, numbers based off speed. I think that stuff is kind of unreasonable. But, you know, things that are kind of more essential to a player knowing what's happening moment to moment, right? You know, like the grab stuff, like the, you know, light, medium, and heavy attacks even. I think just color coding those might be nice in some ways. Again, I'm saying color coding, but really, I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not saying how a game should be developed or made or whatever, that is a good answer. That was the thing I kept hearing as well, just like, I don't want to visually clutter the game. I'm like, well, I think if you can work it into the presentation in a way that like fits into the world, that probably kind of resolves that problem. So I don't think that's important, but I think, like, you know, I think there is room for there to be more information and conveying that to the player, because there's some things in the game that the game does do with that. There's like these moves where like your character glows a little bit, so it kind of helps you kind of identify what move the other player is doing. But I don't feel like the game really explains to those things to you. It just kind of like has it there. So I don't know. I think the thing I'm still looking for is some kind of good onboarding process that's a fun and enjoyable experience that gets players on the level, that is more than just, I want to, you know, throw a Hadouken and heavy kick, right? And then gets them to the point that they can at least say, hey, I know why things are happening in this game, right? Whether they do the most optimal thing or things like that, or respond with the most optimal move is another thing. But I think that is like what I'm looking for, is just like a way to keep the player more informed about what's going on. Because like, there's a, like, there's a lot of walls and barriers there that I think I was kind of fortunate to not know much about this stuff, because I think it helped me really identify a lot of what I would view, for myself at least, to be the hardest things to get through. And I'm still playing fighting games, not as much as I was before. I'm still playing Granblue Fantasy at the moment, but I've had stuff coming up and other things I've been working on. I still want to play more, though. And I started playing a little bit of Blade Arcus as well. But I still want to play fighting games more. I don't know how long I'll keep on it, like, more seriously. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm starting to fall off of it for now. I will come back to fighting games, I'm pretty sure. But I think for Granblue Fantasy, I might have answered most of the questions I was looking to answer, kind of thing. But, you know, if I do get to the point where I feel like I am engaged enough with fighting games to the point that I feel comfortable talking to people who are in that more competitive scene, if I'm not already there, I don't know the answer to that. I haven't talked to anybody outside of these groups about fighting games yet. So maybe if I go to Evo and be like, hey, let me talk to you and see if I, you know, can understand what they're saying and ask the right questions. But I think it'll be valuable for me to, like, understand the troubles of conveying that information back to somebody, because just trying to talk to people about fighting games and the appeal of them just seems so hard unless you already know the appeal of fighting games. So, gosh, this is almost a 2-hour podcast. I'm going. I'm leaving. Good night. Goodbye. Enjoy yourself. 2 weeks. There's some kind of video going up this week. Some going up on Wednesday. It might be me cleaning a PSP. It might be a review. I don't know. Come back. Check it out. Check. See what's going on. I don't know what's happening. But there is a video that went up last week for the Dojin game Tappy Tappy, a like kind of Super Monkey Ball-esque game where you roll a piece of tapioca into boba tea, and it has durability, and depending on the amount of durability you have left at the end of the match, you get a different level of deliciousness. So, very exciting. Anything else? I'm gonna go to Level Up Expo, do the panel. I'll try to record it this time. And, you know, like I said, it's probably more of a casual show. Probably not going to worry too much about it if I, like, stumble over myself and things like that. Especially with just how late I've been getting this whole thing prepared. It's been hard. So, but yeah, I take it casually. And then I actually will be out the rest of that weekend, actually, for a family thing. So not a lot of progress is probably going to happen between now and the next podcast, probably. I'll keep playing some Dynasty Warriors, baby! So anyways, enjoy your 2 weeks. I hope you guys have a good time. Thank you again, Jillian, for all those questions you offered us and I didn't ask them. Appreciate it. Thank you again, Megamint and Demo Dory, for supporting us for the last month or multiple months at this point. So I appreciate that. And I hope you guys enjoy yourself and I hope you have a good week. OneControlWorld.com is the website. Bye!